Welcome back, everybody, to the Traumedy Podcast. It's your old boy, Kenneth Allen, saying, howdy doody. What you been doing out there? Thanks again for listening up. Remember, traumedypodcast.com. You can go there, click through the Amazon banner, buy whatever you want. I get a kickback. Done with the ads. See how quick that is? Tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody you want about the show. It's getting good now, and a couple good things have happened. I just figured I got to check in with you. It's been a while, so I always say it's been a while, so I got to get back and just I'm planning on doing this thing every week. I got to do it. I want to build a good, responsive fan base, and I can only do that if I'm diligent with you, so that you can trust me to come back every week. So, all right, it's just going to be every week. I'm trying to do it every 2 weeks, ends up being every 3 weeks. Hey, come on, man. I got a little time to sit down and talk for a while, at least for 10 to 15 to 20 to 30 minutes, maybe an hour of jaw-jacking in between the guests and everybody else I have on there. So that's what today is, just giving you some updates as far as the cancer goes. Cancer treatments are done. MRI came back in May. PET scan came back May, looked good. They saw a couple hot spots. I don't know if I've told you about how PET scans work, but they inject you with a sugar radioactive compound just before you go in. You can't eat anything for several hours before that. You can't even chew gum because all that stuff will react. And then they inject you with this and they see what cells uptake that. And you can see it on the scan. So it comes in, it looks, and all the things that are taking in that sugar show up bright. They looked and saw not really anything. Some spots, they were like these circles. You know, you're looking at this MRI, which is in black and white, and they're clicking through it. And you see like a circle with an arrow, like, what's this? This is something to look at. And then they run that by the surgeons, the ear, nose, and throat doctors that worked on me, and anybody else who wants to pull that PET scan up. So they looked. The doctor said, especially my neurosurgeon said, no, nothing to worry about. It's all typical what you would assume would be bright. Basically, after radiation, all of those cells are dead. They're sloughing off, and all the new cells are starved. And so they're in a hypermetabolic rate, right? They're new cells. They need their nutrition, and so they're going to be eating more than the other surrounding tissue. So all of that brightness, they said, was nothing to be concerned with. Then I had my MRI in June and with contrast. And not only did they continue to say nothing's to be alerted over, nothing to concern yourself with, but the lymph nodes that I had also felt were sore are no longer even showing up bright. In fact, they said, if anything, they've shrunken. So all of those lymph nodes that would be, you know, I don't know if you know how lymph works, ladies and gentlemen. Lymph tissue and lymph, there's actually a whole circulation built on lymph. You have your circulatory system, and all that blood gets shipped to your cells. It'd be like the front door. It's like if all of our cells were warehouses, they go right through the roll-ups at the front, and you get all of your nutrition, your blood, your oxygen, your sugars, your proteins, whatever you need to go into the cells. And then after that, there's a back door, and it ships off the waste products. Those waste products gets sent through the lymph tissues. The lymph nodes are these little, you know, mediary houses where the tissue gets sent there, kind of filtered, and then continues on its way through the lymph system. And the lymph system inevitably gets dumped somewhere into the digestive tract in different areas. And then you excrete it out through either, you know, you can usually just through waste. So all of those tissues that they saw, you know, the lymph nodes, you're looking at those because that would be where something would migrate, a cancer would migrate to that, because it would be sloughing off of the cells and going and getting trapped in those lymph nodes. And that's why when it starts to metastasize, those lymph nodes start to become involved, right? Well, also any other tissue that's being sloughed off and getting rid of would also accumulate in those lymph tissues and lymph nodes. And so it's pretty common for those to get a little swollen when it's getting all this dead tissue that's dead because of the radiation inside them. And they will swell occasionally and get painful and so forth. And but when I did the MRI, they said, you know what, they've actually shrunken. So that means that the tissue now is pretty much on its way out, and there's nothing new grown in there, and they don't see anything with it. So it looks like for now, you know, knock on wood there too, because that does things, because that's your caveman way of warding off evil, right? Holy shit. Isn't it funny how many things you do in this day and age? You're like, cavemen were so silly. They used to follow signs and they would ward off evil spirits with incantations. And what's knocking on wood other than warding off evil spirits by some strange, some ritual? It's like throwing salt over your shoulder. Yeah, okay. Yeah, we all still do that stuff now. Cavemen were no less intelligent than we were, other than the fact that they didn't have all the base information that we do on a regular basis. But they're practicing superstitions are basically the same thing that we have now. Don't kid yourselves. By the way, how many of you could actually go out into the wild, hunt, kill, farm, and raise not only crops, but also your family, and keep yourselves alive, and build a fire shelter, and actually build a shelter with fire? You know, how many of us could do that? How many of us could walk the earth with bare feet, let alone hunt, chasing down an animal with spears, or chasing him off of a cliff? But I digress. So the scans have come back good, and I've rested enough, and I have gone back to work. I'm back on light duty, which means I'm down at the training center getting all of my training done. Not any physical training, although that's the larger part of why I need to be down there for a while. I want to be in tip-top shape before I go back on the line. I don't want to go back and be exhausted after a fire, and I don't want to be too tired after running 8-10 calls a shift. So the big thing there is get all of my certifications up to date, as well as get my heart, lungs, cardiovascular system, my whole body back in fighting order. So I've been down there for, this is the end of the second week down there, and I'm feeling really good. I'm feeling beat, and I miss that. I miss that feeling of being exhausted. It's really necessary. You know, you don't realize how important it is to have a drive, have a momentum towards something in life. And although this may not be my end trajectory, what is my trajectory and what is important is that I stay task-oriented, goal-oriented, and always shoulder into whatever I'm going after, leaning into it. And that's what I've been. Listen, I went down there and working out every morning as soon as I get there. That's important to me. It makes me feel better. I just know exercise is one of those things that we need as humans. We need it. We need to be able to focus in the midst of your body's heart rate increasing, dumps of adrenaline and so forth. At least I need that with the adrenaline and the sweat. And then right in the midst of that, having to do finely tuned coordination. Like now you've run with a hose bag and a hose gear and you've run it and done a reverse lay and you're at the fire hydrant and you have to put the hose on the fire hydrant, which means now you have to work by taking off the covers, flushing it, putting the hose on there, and charging this line when it's needed. And so those kind of skills are really essential, obviously, to being a firefighter, but also essential to military tactics, to police tactics, to emergency or crisis type operations. And I had forgotten, not just, I wouldn't say, okay, so I had forgotten how much it works for with me, how much it appeals to me, and how well I can do it, I guess, how I'm built to naturally do that. Not great, you know, I'm not saying I'm the great, I'm great at it, but it makes sense to me. And when my mind starts to say, yes, I know how to do, oh, I know this feeling, good. there's a certain feeling of coming home in the midst of chaos that I've missed. I've missed for months, for longer than half a year, because I've been off. Now, I've been dealing with my own low stress, chronic cortisol drops because of dumps, I should say, because of the cancer, because of the chronic worries and the waking up in the middle of the night, worrying about it. What could it be? How could it change? Is it changing? What is going on here? And what should I, you know, how do I proceed? What's going to happen? And all those things, nothing can be answered that night. And yet it keeps you up. So, yeah, I've been dealing with that. But this is a whole new monster. And this is a whole animal that shouldn't call it a monster. It's an animal. And I know how to ride it. And with that, it gives me a kind of peace of mind and a calmness that then translates into my handling, rationalizing, understanding of my cancer situation and how to calm my heart and mind and body to that. And it's just an important thing to keep in mind for me, and I would say for you too, that when you do one thing, your brain learns it and applies it almost innately, naturally, to every other aspect of your life, your job, your love, your relationships, your family, and kind of gives you this unification, this overall feeling of cohesiveness. And it comes to me from working out and from thinking critically and by thinking in the moment. So whether it's for you running or CrossFit or yoga or meditation or whatever it is, however you pull yourself together and you center yourself, that will translate into how you center yourself for everything in life. And it's just good practice. It's just really good practice. And I'm glad that I got back to it. I feel important. I do have this importance again, and I love it. And so if you don't have that, well, maybe give working out a shot. Really give it a shot. We have this thing in San Jose called a TPE. I can't even remember what the hell TPE stands for. Something, team physical exam. I don't know, whatever it is. Anyway, you got to do a bunch of obstacles. And it starts off with you having to put on your breathing apparatus within 60 seconds and be on air. And they go, time. And then they come around and they proctor and they pull on your... They pull on your helmet to see if it'll come off. They check and see if your shroud on the back of the helmet is down. They make sure that there's no leakage around your mask, or we do. And then once you've done that, you got your gloves on, they go, okay, move to the next obstacle. And you move to that next obstacle. And that's, in this case, you got to carry a bundle of hose with all your gear on, breathing air, up 7 flights of stairs. You got to walk all the way up. You switch your pack off with your partner, your hose bundle, and then you come back down, still breathing air. You move to the next operation, which is throwing a ladder on a window balcony, all on air, practicing all of those, you know, fine-tuned skills. And at this point, I'll tell you, you're huffing. You do that, you go back and you do you practice trying to pull ceiling, like you got these hooks and you're smashing into these little weighted roof props, and it's supposed to mimic you pulling ceiling inside a home looking for fire. After the fire's down, you pull and see, well, is there fire in here? Let's spray it down with hose. And you go to the next one, which is an axe chop, and at the axe chop you have to again all on air, you got to chop 90 times at least within 2 minutes or whatever number you can get to. And then you move on to a hose drag, and you can move on to then carrying a body, 150-pound dummy, into a tunnel, pulling the body through the tunnel, and then dragging it to the cone, and then you're done. So I was there proctoring all of these young cadets doing it, and everybody's really scared because, of course, they're in their academy now, and you got all of that physicality plus the adrenaline that you got to pass this thing in order to stay in the class. And if you get too many dings on it, they might kick you out of the academy, which means you don't have a job at San Jose Fire. You don't, you lose, you miss out. So all of these things are going on with these kids. And it really, to me, does mimic that high stress environment, not because of the fire in this case, but because of your job. You see, in the in emergency medicine, there's a really common verbiage there's a common saying that when you start to get nervous on a call, slow down. Remember, this is not your emergency. This is the patient's emergency. You're not having a heart attack. They are. So you don't need to be, you don't go up to their level of stress and panic. Your job is to save them. Your job is to calm it down, breathe easy, and make sure you get the IVs. Make sure that you push the right medications. Make sure that you get the 12-lead EKG on them. And if you need to, you shock or you give them other medications. And you keep them alive, because it's their emergency, not yours. But in the academy, well, that's your emergency. There is no one else that's going to suffer if you screw up. It's you. So really, that stress, that added stress to that obstacle course, really does help to mimic a high stress environment like a fire or like a resuscitation. So I got through teaching all these guys, or at least proctoring them, and you know, I'm just a big fan of, as they're doing it, giving them, you know, hey, you got a good pace going, you got a good pace, we're at 1 minute, you got to get this done in 2 minutes, and just talking to them, letting them know, but keeping a nice calm demeanor with them. Some guys like to, you know, get a little bit rowdy, like to, hey, come on, motherfucker, you got it, you know, whatever it takes, whatever they decide is their way, probably how they were motivated in the academy. And then some of them are quiet. Some of the proctors are quiet. They don't say anything until the end, and they go, you didn't make the time. Well, I'm not into that. I'd like the cadets to kind of know. But then I guess there's an added stress for them to know the time. I'm just trying it out. Try out whatever you think is going to work. And they did really well. They did well. The two guys that I had to watch through it kicked ass. And they're young cadets. They haven't done firefighting in the past. So, hey, take that with a grain of salt, you know, and allow them to do what they got to do. And what I keep trying to tell everybody is, this is the time to screw up. This is the time in the academy to make mistakes and fail, screw up, drop shit. Go at the speed that you think you're going to go at a fire. Calm yourself down, but move at 1.5 times the speed. Go fast. And guess what's going to happen when you do that? You're going to trip. You're going to drop stuff. You're going to fumble with your gloves to get them on and to get the fine-tuned manipulation of putting on a hose strap to tie a ladder to a balcony. It's going to be hard because your body's at a faster speed and you're trying to do, and your heart rate's up and you're breathing out of a mask and you're semi-claustrophobic. Everybody's a little bit claustrophobic. And you're going to be tripped up. But this is the goal of this, is not to deny it, but to understand, to accept that feeling and get used to it, because that's your normal feeling when you're on these fires. And here goes somebody else, just get comfortable going fast. So my whole point is, when I'm teaching them, is welcome that feeling and work through that feeling, and you're gonna do well. You're gonna do just, and if you screw up today, it's not a failure. It's a learning move. There really is no failure. Failure is you don't do it again, or you die. So don't do either of those things. At least if I'm watching you, because then I gotta write all the paperwork and everything, and I don't want to have to do all that. That's hilarious. So, but you get it. That makes sense, huh? I mean, it really does. And you only learn that when you kind of have a little peace of mind and you can sit back after you've done things at that rate and you get to that level. You never run when you're running and you get to, like, you know, maybe your first quarter mile and you start to really feel it and your heart, your lungs are a little bit burning, or it might be a mile for some of you, or it might be a lap, who knows. And then your legs start to hurt and you're going, shit, I don't know if I can even do a mile, let alone two. Then you round the corner and you get to like the second lap and your body kicks into second gear and all of a sudden your lungs open up and your legs don't hurt anymore or as much. And you go, whew, 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 and you're in that second gear. And then all of a sudden, the anxiety drops, the peace kind of comes over you a little bit, and you go, oh, right, I just had to click into the next gear. But I had to rev my RPMs up enough in order to get into this gear. So now I'm at this gear. Now I can push it into third or fourth or fifth or even sixth, you know, depending on what point of the run you're at or whatever the obstacle is or whatever you want to do. And that comes from, you have to push yourself to get to that level. You have to run at that speed, you know, 1.5 times. You have to give yourself a little challenge and stay at that level, even when your body's saying, I can't, I don't know if we can do that. I don't know. That questioning rational mind of yours that is always kind of looking for a way out. But when there is no way out, and a lot, most of the job that we do, when there really is a high stress moment, there is no way out. And there is no turning back. And there is no stopping patient care. We just have to go. We have to do it. And so we have to do this as best we can. So that's what I try and instill to anybody. And, well, listen, to most importantly to me. Because I only got one person that I'm trying to beat and who's always trying to beat me. And he's the laziest son of a bitch. You know, always finding a way out, always saying, but wait, oh, you could just take it easy here. Mm-mm. No, I can't. And that's the guy that I always struggle with. And then after the thing's done, when I actually do what I said, what I feel I should do, rather than what has been told to me I can relax on, at the end I go, you see, we could do that, couldn't we? We did get through that, huh? Okay. So maybe you don't know so much. Maybe I'm right on this more often than I'm not. And that's that struggle, that inward struggle, and that's also a toughness of mindset and everything. I'll give you one more story. I'm kind of going on here, and this is going to be really short, but we finished up the proctoring of that, and I was just amped because I'm working out, and I went, I'm going to do a TPE. Now the guy's down there, and he's like, hey, you want to do it? Let's do it. I go, hey, you're my partner. Let's nail this. Let's do it. So we suited up, threw the bottle. I get going up the stairs, gassed. I am at the third floor, and I'm already going, sucking air. And I go, all right, here we go. We're going to get through this. We still have every other prop to go through. So let's take it easy. And yeah, but you've been out for eight months. You may not be able to do that. We're going to do this. Breathe into that person and go, hey, listen, man, we're going to do this today. And I got to the hose, the axe chop there. And boy, I got to about the 30th swing and I was done. They had polished the axes so well because they're in the academy. Everything's high gloss, high sheen. And that axe was sliding out of my leather gloves like it was greased. And I mean, I could feel it. And I mean, I'm the tendency was to slide out. So you're squeezing, and I'm squeezing, and I'm hitting this. We're cutting into telephone poles. They got telephone poles on the sides, and that you just chop into it 90 times. Well, I mean, I was ready to quit. The only reason I didn't was at this point, the academy had heard that there's two firefighters going through it. So they come out. Because, you know, well, either to learn from it or to give up, whatever. But they're standing there, and they start cheering. And it's about, you know, 30 kids. Well, it was like 15, whatever. But at this point, I'm going, well, these motherfuckers showed up. Now I can't stop. Now there's no way for me to stop. So just swing. And it comes down to chop. And chop and chop and keep going. And finally, I hit 90. And it was good. And at the end there, I had to climb this through this tunnel and pull this 150-pound guy through the tunnel. And the whole academy's there, and they're watching me and this guy go through it. And it was a ball buster. I have not done this thing since 2009. And yeah, I am coming off of cancer and 8 months off. And yeah, I could feel it all through my bones. I could feel it like surging through my muscles and through my blood vessels, man. And it was acid. And kept going. I got to the end there, and My buddy, Richie Anderson, he looks over at me, and you can see I'm gassed. He goes, get behind him, lift it up. You got to get him over the ledge. And I'm going, I'm not saying it, but my brain's going, I don't think you have the strength. And I just said, I don't have a choice. I don't have a choice. Got behind it and just lifted with, you know, grunted and concentrated on hold on hard, lift up. Two exercises, boom, done. Head dropped in, then climb through. Don't lose your mask, stay on it. Get to the end and you got to pull once. And I pulled once, didn't move, I slid further in. No choice, you got to get him through. If this were real, you got to get this firefighter through. Pulled again, found a way to lock my knee, found a way to lock my shoe, and used that as an anchor. And pulled, got an axe, wrapped it around the patient's, the guy, the dummy's back, and used the axe to pull him out. And I just leaned back and dragged this motherfucker to the cones. Now, place erupted. It was great. Scott Trabert is down there as the training captain. He's fantastic. Guys, the Coast Guard, he's a great dude. We worked at 18 together. He's just an acerbic, fucking hilarious guy. But he leans into me and he goes, hey, man, don't fucking die, okay? Because, no, all right? Just take it easy. And I'm going, I will. He's like, okay, all right. Just kind of walked off like, okay, motherfucker, I told you. I said it, so if anything happens, I told you so. So it was great, but did it. And the thing is, you got to count. I counted myself in. I said, I couldn't do it. I said, there's no other choice. Get through it and tone it down to, rather than moving and running, it's literally 1 foot and then the next foot. It's one chop and then the next chop. It's one straight up lift and then relax. And it's one drag, one step at a time. And you just get there. When I worked the Nike Women's Marathon as a firefighter handing out Tiffany jewelry while wearing a tuxedo with a whole group of firefighters, talk about a cush gig. You got all these women coming down on an endorphin high after running a marathon, and you're handing them Tiffany jewelry at the finish line saying congratulations. Like, I mean, could we have a cooler job? And they run over and they hug you and they take snapshots with you for 3 hours and just thousands of women. It's fantastic. It's the greatest gig. I mean, it's badass. So we did that. And I saw as one of the women was coming through, I just asked her, I said, Jesus, she goes, this is my first marathon. I said, how did you, she's like, well, I mean, just train. And I'm like, any issues? And she's like, yeah, I got to mile 15 and I didn't have anything left. And I'm like, well, what'd you do? She said, just keep swimming. Just keep swimming. That's it. So everybody out there, you know when it feels like, you know, it's dark and there's nothing coming and you still keep getting hit with shit and you go, that's it, that's all I got. And then you get bulldozed over. That's where you just stop, take a breath, and you say, one chop at a time, one step. Just keep swimming. Just keep swimming. You don't have to be anywhere else but right here. And then when you're through with this, then you're done. And then you can look back on yourself and say, see, I told you we could do it. Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening up. Kenneth Allen again. Tell everybody the Traumedy Podcast is back in effect and we're going to get it going every week. All right? Until then, if you got it, use it. And guess what? We all got it. So use it. Talk to you all soon. Love you all. Bye.